welcome to Vital Voices and the second part of our discussion about prostate cancer. If you missed part one, you can listen to it at WETS.org, then programming, then podcasts. According to the American Cancer Society, prostate cancer is the most common cancer among men, with skin cancer being next. Nearly 314,000 new cases of prostate cancer are diagnosed each year in the United States. About 36,000 men die from prostate cancer each year. The American Cancer Society says the number of prostate cancers diagnosed each year declined sharply from 2007 to 2014, coinciding with fewer men being screened because of changes in screening recommendations. Since 2014, however, the incidence rate has increased by about 3% a year. The American Cancer Society reports that about 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during their lifetime. But each man's risk of prostate cancer can vary based on his age, race and ethnicity, and other factors. For example, prostate cancer is more likely to develop in older men. About 6 in 10 prostate cancers are diagnosed in men who are 65 or older, and it's rare in men under 40. The average age of men when they are first diagnosed is 67. The American Cancer Society adds that about 1 in 44 men will die of prostate cancer. Prostate cancer can be a serious disease, but most men diagnosed with it do not die from it. In fact, more than 3.5 million men in the United States who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer at some point are still alive today. The death rate from prostate cancer declined by about half from 1993 to 2022, most likely due to earlier detection and advances in treatment. In recent years, the decline in the death rate has slowed, likely reflecting the rise in cancers being found at an advanced stage. The American Cancer Society points out that catching cancer early often allows for more treatment options. Some early cancers may have signs and symptoms that can be noticed, but that is not always the case. One method of detecting prostate cancer is, of course, the PSA test, which measures the prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, in a patient's blood. That test is discussed in detail in our previous program. Many doctors use a PSA cutoff point of 4 or higher when deciding if a man might need further testing, such as a biopsy, while others might recommend it starting at a lower level, such as 2.5 or 3. Some doctors might use age-specific cutoffs. The American Cancer Society says that for some men, getting a prostate biopsy might be the best option, especially if their initial PSA level is high. A biopsy is a procedure in which small samples of the prostate are removed and examined under a microscope. The American Cancer Society says this test is the only way to know for sure if a man has prostate cancer. If prostate cancer is found through a biopsy, the test can also help determine how likely it is that the cancer will grow and spread. The topic of prostate cancer re-entered the national spotlight back in May of this year, when former President Joe Biden was diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer, which has spread to his bones. Biden, who is 82, had been having urinary symptoms. Last week on Vital Voices, we discussed the Gleason scale, which describes how prostate cancers look under a microscope. Biden's Gleason score was a 9. Among other topics today, we'll focus on prostate cancer treatments. For this program, we traveled to Nashville, Tennessee, to talk with Dr. Kristen Scarpato. Dr. Scarpato is Associate Professor of Urology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, as well as Residency Program Director and Vice Chair of Education for the Department of Urology at VUMC. I know this is a complex question based on lots of variables, but give me some treatment options that are currently available to the prostate cancer patient.
Sure. So by risk, starting with low-risk patients across guidelines, the recommendation is management with active surveillance, and that's regular PSA checks, periodic biopsies, periodic MRIs, and that's to make sure that the disease we aren't missing something that's living alongside the low-risk cancer that we've diagnosed. And in that scenario, we are maximizing quality of life and functional outcomes for a low-risk cancer that is not going to shorten a patient's life or spread to other parts of the body. For some patients who have grade group 2 or favorable intermediate risk cancer, that is also a management option. Otherwise, intermediate and high-risk patients, the two mainstays of treatment are either surgical removal, and that's a radical prostatectomy done most commonly with a robotic platform, the Da Vinci surgical robot. During that procedure, the prostate, the seminal vesicles, and sometimes the pelvic lymph nodes are removed, and the bladder is reattached to the urethra. The patient has to wear a Foley catheter for about 10 days. And after that, we follow PSA regularly. Patients go to our survivorship clinic where urinary and sexual function are a focus, a priority, because the first 12 to 24 months is really a time of healing and patience and working to kind of maximize and rehab urinary and sexual function. Radiation is a very broad term. It's a treatment modality that can be delivered via external beam over many weeks. It can be given in a short course. Stereotactic body radiotherapy can be appropriate for some patients. There's seeds that can be implanted into the prostate that are also emitting radiation over time. And there's also proton therapy, which is another type of energy delivered to the prostate. I will say, too, you know, not guideline top tier evidence yet, but there is also focal therapy or prostate ablation.
I saw that on your bio.
Yeah, that's something that I do too. And there is a large body of literature surrounding focal therapy. It's just not comparative effectiveness. So it's not randomized control trials comparing HIFU or cryotherapy or, you know, irreversible electroporation to standard therapies like radiation or surgery. And so in order to get FDA approval to treat prostate cancer and to be part of the guidelines, you need that level of evidence. I think there are many reasons why it's not available yet and challenging to perform. That said, we do have a lot of evidence that shows us that in the short to medium term, partial gland treatment with heat or cold or some other form of energy can effectively treat the prostate cancer and minimize the side effects. If you're leaving a part of most of the gland or half of the gland alone, it makes sense that a patient's urinary and sexual function are not as impacted as they are with whole gland treatments. So I think in carefully selected patients, particularly those who have favorable intermediate risk prostate cancer, focal therapy or hemigland treatment is a good and reasonable treatment option.
So the bottom line is it doesn't have to be a death sentence. There are lots of options.
That is true. And I think, to your point, it can be a frustrating process to hear that you have cancer and here are your many options. What do you want to do when sometimes patients say, hey, I'm scared. I want you to tell me what I should do. And that's part of the reason why I love treating prostate cancer, because you and I, we form a relationship. We talk about the pros and cons, the good, the bad, the ugly of all the management options. And then together we decide, because treatment regret is a real phenomena in prostate cancer. There's a lot of good work. Chris Wallace has published quite a bit on this. And my job, and I tell all my patients this, is to make sure you don't regret the treatment that you chose. We're going to walk forwards, and, you know, regardless of what happens, we made this decision with all the information, all the input, and felt good about it.
Our topic on Vital Voices today is prostate cancer, and our guest is Dr. Kristen Scarpato, Associate Professor of Urology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
As a woman treating a very sensitive male affliction, how did you get over the initial awkwardness, if there was any?
I didn't have any, fortunately. And I think it is rare that I experience that patients have that, you know. And as a female, my gynecologist is a male, and I never particularly found that awkward. And so I don't know if that played into it, but I think patients want to have a caring, competent doctor, and I don't think that that awkwardness is as pervasive as maybe it once was.
Talk a little bit about former President Biden's diagnosis and what that meant, and what it may have meant to the field of prostate cancer research and interest nationwide.
It certainly did point a lot of attention onto prostate cancer, and I think that that's a good thing. As a prostate cancer doctor, I think attention and maybe potentially additional resources are beneficial and will help our understanding and treatment options. I wish former President Biden well, and I hope he does okay. I think it brings up a lot of questions about PSA screening, like we were talking about before. And, you know, I don't know the details surrounding his care, but, you know, he was out of the range of what we recommend for PSA screening. So perhaps it wasn't performed. And, you know, it wasn't until later that something else led to his diagnosis. In his case, I do think that there's a lot of reason to hope for advanced prostate cancer, too. We've seen so many different treatments that have been developed that are oral pills that can lengthen a patient's life without significantly impacting quality as some other treatments like IV chemotherapy or, you know, other kind of more invasive treatments have been in the past. So I think that there's hope and optimism for patients who do have a later stage diagnosis.
Let me go back to PSA for a minute. Mm-hmm. An elevated PSA, though, that doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer. Is that right?
That's right. That does not. You can have an elevated PSA if you have a large prostate. More prostate makes more PSA. If you have any inflammation from, infection or trauma, or, you know, a recent colonoscopy, or, you know, sometimes patients say, I was riding this tractor and, you know, really hitting my prostate. So, you know, potentially that can cause the PSA number to go up. So it really is just a marker of prostate disease, not prostate cancer.
Now, do you do the Da Vinci surgery yourself here?
I sure do.
How does that work?
It is a laparoscopic platform that allows us to better see and access the prostate. The prostate is a walnut that lives deep in the pelvis, and it's really hard to get access to the prostate. The Da Vinci allows us magnification. The patient positioning is such that we're able to move the bowels out of the way, and the instruments are long and thin, so we can access the prostate more easily than with an open approach. There are still many urologists who are quite facile with an open prostatectomy, and those patients can do just as well and be discharged in short order. But the majority of trainees now, and I would say practicing urologists, appreciate the benefits of the robot, and that is just a really, I think, great way to see and do your nerve sparing and your anastomosis, the connection between the bladder and the urethra. The visualization is so much better.
Before we close, we must emphasize again the importance of PSA screening.
PSA is really the workhorse in the screening of prostate cancer, and it is an imperfect test, but right now it's the best test we have. So PSA screening is something that should be undertaken thoughtfully in men who are, you know, aged 45 to 70 and have expected at least 10-year longevity. Sometimes we start screening earlier, as early as age 40, but never before age 40 for patients who are at higher risk. And after that thoughtful discussion, which the urologist is not admittedly the one who's usually having those conversations, it starts in primary care, that test can indicate to us whether or not we should be concerned about prostate cancer. We always confirm with a second test if the number is elevated. And if it is, and we've ruled out other causes of the PSA elevation, you know, an active infection or some recent procedure, then we usually pursue additional workup, given that there is a risk of prostate cancer. And it depends on age, it depends on how high the elevation is. And typically now, the next step is actually not a biopsy, it's an MRI, to give us a better picture of the prostate and help us maximize our biopsy and the efficacy of the biopsy if there is a region of interest or area of concern of prostate cancer.
Dr. Kristen Scarpato, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
It is my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Our guest has been Dr. Kristen Scarpato, Associate Professor of Urology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. She also serves as Residency Program Director and Vice Chair of Education for the Department of Urology at VUMC. Vital Voices is heard every Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on WETS. And you can find past programs by visiting our website, WETS.org, then Programming, then Podcasts. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.